also wrote a very nice FAQ about how to support the striking academic workers.
And is there a website
Honestly,
you can give out for more information?
so one of the websites is faircnow.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Joyce, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck to you and your fellow workers.
Yes, thank you so much for having me today.
My guest has been Joyce Chan, a postdoctoral fellow in postdoctoral scholar in neurosciences at the University of California, San Diego, and one of the union organizers at a historic UC academic workers' strike. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy award-winning band Kitsap. Like us on facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. for Squirrel Snow, the show where we broadcast galactic awareness, animal awareness, where we have fascinating conversations with movers and shakers in the fields of galactic awareness and animal awareness, and we play music that can raise our frequency of consciousness. Yeah, that is Squirrel Snow every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO, Portland.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. This is your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Ain't that the truth? And here we are back in the studio.
Good to be back.
Yeah. We've had an interesting couple of weeks that I'm sure you may know something about. But you know what? At some point, we will do a full recap. There's a lot of moving pieces right now, and I know that everyone wants to know what it was like and everything. We see all the questions online. We appreciate that love and everyone's support, but you know, the story will be ready to be told when it's ready, and obviously we will be the ones to tell it, so stay tuned. But for now, we are going to revert to type, back to business as usual, so stick around. Got a lot in store for you today. We will be talking about a disturbing video that came our way about a black man who was jumped by a group of police officers in a small prison cell. You may have seen the video. It's very disturbing. So we're going to unpack that a bit. We're also going to talk about our current political climate. You know, we had an interesting midterm election season with a lot more favorable outcomes, in my opinion. But the fact remains that this country is very divided. And in fact, it feels like we are subscribing to two different realities. And it's deeply troubling and deeply unsettling because, you know, this is supposed to be the United States of America. And it's never felt further from that in my lifetime. So those and much more in store for you to stick around for. But first and foremost, we're going to share some Ebony Excellence with you. How does that sound, Q?
Shall we?
We shall. So Ebony Excellence, this week it is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media. We will be talking about Capital B News. If you haven't heard about Capital B News, it is a media imprint that has just started up. and it was started by two Black women. And we celebrate Black Girl Magic around here. So allow me to share a bit. Lauren Williams is a chief executive officer and co-founder of Capital B. Before starting Capital B, she was the senior vice president and editor-in-chief at Box, where she oversaw all editorial and business operations. She also held positions of executive editor and managing editor there. Prior to Box, she was an editor at Mother Jones and The Root, which is where we source a lot of our material. Her first journalism job was in local news at the Daily Press in Newport News, Virginia. And Akoto Aforiata is the co-founder and chief audience officer of Capital B. She was previously managing editor at The Trace, where she was responsible for the award-winning newsroom's partnerships, special projects, and editorial operations. She previously held positions as senior editor at Essence Magazine and associate editor at The Root, and is a 2015 John S. Knight Journalism Fellow. And these two women started Capital B because in the workplace, their former superiors were debating on how to speak to Black issues, but couldn't get past whether or not to capitalize the B.
Wow.
Right?
Powerful.
Yeah. And so they're like, you know what? These folks don't really, they're not speaking from our perspective. They're not prioritizing the things that, you know, all these things, you know, your heart may be in the right place, or maybe this is purely symbolic, but let's start our own thing. Let's tell our stories, which is what we've done here on Civic Cypher, Q and myself. And so we salute that as often as we can. So shout out to Capital B News. Be sure to check them out. We're going to love them now and forever.
Now and forever.
Mm-hmm. So, Q, you want to talk about the video for our listeners?
So, I mean, Ramses said it, you know, back to form, back to type, back to, unfortunately, normal. And you guys who listen to our show, you guys have heard us say that we kind of share the emotional and mental burden of having to watch a lot of the videos that are submitted to us, a lot of the videos and stories that we come across, just because of the trauma associated with them, how difficult the subject matter is.
By share, you mean you'll take one story,
correct,
watch one video, and then I'll take the next one, so that we don't become desensitized to trauma against Black bodies.
Yes.
And we don't become overwhelmed emotionally. Please continue.
However, with this video, we both had a chance to look at it, and
yeah.
A lot of news outlets, media outlets, newspapers, magazines would start this story with what the gentleman did wrong to end up in the custody of the officers in the first place.
Yeah.
We believe that it's done with intent,
mm-hmm,
to take away the empathy, the sympathy, to dehumanize, or to remove the normal human reaction of caring for each other or not wanting to see other people be harmed. In order to kind of take that away, these stories often start with them telling you how essentially deserving this person was of what came next. Mm-hmm. If this person hadn't done such and such, they would not have been in jail or prison or in the custody of the police in the first place. So everything that happened from there, they kind of deserved it. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't say those words, it's implied just by leading the story off with that.
Exactly.
But what you will see in this video is a man who was already in custody. We'll try to provide a link so you guys can watch this video, because maybe I might say the wrong number. But again, I don't want us to argue over semantics. Five or six officers is what I'm picturing in my head, because yeah, I'm not looking at the video right now.
Please recall it. I got everything here. So
five or six officers have this man, again, already in custody. It looks like attempting to handcuff or further subdue. Again, already in custody, five of them or six of them, one of him. And then, not 10 seconds into this video, that attempt turns into one of them striking him. And then all of them striking him repeatedly. One or two of them trying to hold them, three or four of them continuing to strike him. And then, as a normal living being would do, him trying to defend and or protect himself,
mm-hmm,
which, as you could imagine, causes them to go even harder with trying to harm him.
Right.
And I'm sure in their head, yes, he hit back, so now we can really go in.
Right.
And it's hard for me to watch any further than that, because you only see videos like this when the person in custody looks like Ramses and I.
I want to ask you something, Q.
Please.
I don't know if we've done this enough with these videos. We've definitely done it, but I want to ask you something. All right, pretend I don't know the answer. When you watched that video, how did that make you feel?
There's multiple emotions.
Please, sure.
Right? The initial reaction is shock, even still. When I see an officer wearing a badge punch a person, not defending themselves, not protecting themselves or anyone else, a person who's already been apprehended, already subdued, already in jail, surrounded by, again, half a dozen officers, it still shocks me. And maybe after so many times, like you said, we should be numb to it or expect it, but I still don't. It catches me off guard every time. And I've seen comments where people are like, well, hey, what do you expect? I expect the person to have some dignity, even if they broke a law. Because in this great country of ours, you are not supposed to get beat over the head for driving your car too fast. Now, I don't know that that's why this man was in custody. I'm just saying, we don't have a legal system that says this person broke a law, you guys should beat him up.
Okay. All right, so let me jump in. I pulled the source material for this segment from the Black Information Network, where I also did an in-depth analysis of this video. So please check out the Black Information Network daily podcast, hosted by yours truly, if you want a little bit more in-depth analysis of kind of the whys, but I'll kind of share them in brief. All right. An attorney is calling for a criminal investigation after a video emerged of officers beating his client, the 41-year-old Black man from North Carolina, in a cell at a Georgia corrections facility. I'm 40 years old. How old are you?
Q? 41.
Okay. Civil rights attorney Harry Daniels said in a news release that the footage shows his client, Jared Hobbs, being mercilessly beaten. I think that's fair.
That's an accurate description.
Sure. Mercilessly beaten by officers at the Camden County Detention Center back in September. So that's how many months? So was it November? You get it.
Yeah.
All right. That was according to CNN. Hobbs was alone when five officers, four of whom appear to be white, entered his cell. You know how big a cell is, right?
Yes, sir.
A little tiny little box of
room. Barely enough closet. Room for six people.
Yeah. So five officers, four of whom appear to be white, entered into his cell and began wrestling him. According to the video obtained by CNN, the video appears to show one officer grabbing Hobbs by the neck and others hitting him on the head. A second video released by attorneys shows officers pulling the 41-year-old Black man out of the cell and wrestling him on the ground, with at least one officer kicking Hobbs. All right. So if that were the whole story, which it isn't, I'm going to share a little bit more. If that were the whole story, you might think, if you are not accustomed or not learned insofar as how Black people are treated by the criminal justice system in this country, that might shock you a bit, right? But this is something that is often the outcome when trauma is experienced, but it doesn't result in death, right? There used to be a term in the early to mid 90s that we refer to as police brutality. And then after the militarization of the police, after, you know, Desert Storm and, you know, all the other things, all the equipment came back and police started getting tanks and helicopters and all kinds of stuff, bigger guns and, you know, just more militarized police force, police shootings started to take center stage in the media, and police brutality, police violence, kind of is a less sensationalized topic, right? But I think it's important to focus on stories where a person doesn't lose their life by a police shooting them, because this man and his family even, you know, and you could make the argument that his community, and I know that people like me and you that see that and have to watch and have to experience and then regurgitate it so that we can speak out against it. You know, there's a ripple effect to that trauma, not just for him. And, you know, there's something about, this is the human being in me talking, there's something about seeing a police shooting where it's like pop, pop, person loses their life. It's awful, horrible. It's so sad. But because of how quickly it happens, you don't really think of the suffering. You just think of, you know, it's kind of an open and shut story. It's sad. It's tragic. The life is over. Heart stops beating. Consciousness goes to whatever the next realm of existence is, right? That transition is incredibly sad. We deal with that regularly here. But when you see the actual suffering and the pain inflicted over and over again by every punch and every kick, and you see this black person with their black body and their black hair just getting tossed around in a very tiny closet-sized space by a bunch of people, you know, and when you see this person ultimately, you know, imagine if it, just hear me out, please. Imagine if this is happening to you, okay? Your back is against three walls, and then the only open wall, there's five men attacking you, right? And as you know, we talk about this on the show, there is a panic response system built into every creature on this planet with a nervous system. It's called fight or flight, right? So that means your instincts will push you to either flee or to engage physically, right? This is all you got. Every like, if you're a duck, that's what you got. If you have a nervous system, if you're a fish, that's what you got. Okay. So you see, after him getting tossed around, punched, you know, beat up, that he tries to, you know, fight back. And it doesn't look like anything other than what it is, a person who looks like he's about to die and his flailing arms attempting at saving his own life. Okay. Now, mind you, at that point in the video, we've seen it. At that point in the video, he's already been getting beat up on.
He's been for taking lumps by that point.
Right. So, for those people who look at these things and say, well, he shouldn't have hit back, there's nothing that you can say, because he already was getting hit and didn't hit back, right?
Yeah, but not hitting back did not make the outcome better. It's not like they were like, okay, he's not quote unquote resisting, he's not fighting back, so stop punching him. Nope. Yeah. And then once he did, you can see them again kind of get excited,
because they're like, oh, now we're justified.
Now we're justified.
And you know how the story went, right? Because they wrote that he like assaulted them. I'll get to the details in a second. Please. But they wrote that he assaulted them.
Wow.
When we know that they just barged into the cell. So let's get to that. So first, why did he end up in there in the first place? Okay. And then we'll go to why did the officers approach him in his cell? Okay. So I'm glad you brought up that. He was brought in for a suspended license. Guessing he was pulled over for speeding. They found that he had a suspended license. And the other charge says that he had a drug possession, okay, while he was speeding. And then they said something from like 2014 that he was on probation, okay? So, as you know, the media tries to paint this sort of strange picture of like long-standing criminal behavior and charges, you know, trumped up charges, as you would say, Q, which is exceptionally unfair, because you and I both know, and perhaps some of our listeners know, about this infraction that is valid in this country, and it's called being black and nearby.
Yeah.
Okay. For those who are unfamiliar with the infraction of being black and nearby, it's exactly what it sounds like. If you are close enough and melanated enough, you can get hemmed up in some stuff and have nothing to do with you, right? We talk about this on the show quite a bit. But suffice it to say that, you know, anything can happen. You can get arrested for something, placed in jail, you know, your trial's 3-4 months out, you know, you can't bond out, you can't bail out because you don't have the money to bail out, you might be innocent. These are stories that we talk about on the show. I'm just walking you through this. So you take a plea so you can leave. If you plead guilty to this, it'll be time served and you're back on the street. Now you have a criminal record, even though you didn't do anything, just because you were poor and couldn't, you know, pay for a lawyer. You were just too close to whatever, right? Now that you have this criminal history and you have, you're on probation or whatever it is, you know, whatever you, this is one example. This happens in many different variations, but now you have a criminal history. So from 2014, your probation, you managed to make it, what, almost 9 years. It's almost a decade, right? And then you get pulled over for speeding. I probably shouldn't admit this on the radio, but I got a speeding ticket. Now, I was driving a Corvette at the time, but I was going 51 and a 40. That's not speeding to me, but it's speeding according to the law, right? So technically, that's breaking the law, right? So you get a speeding ticket. But this happens to everybody. You know how easy it is to get a suspended license and not even know about it. Okay. So a suspended license, you get pulled over for speeding. And then what's the elephant in the room? Possession of a drug. Now, they don't say what this drug is. This could be a bottle of pills with someone else's name on it. That doesn't my grandma's medicine. Or it could be, you know, something more serious and sinister if that's where your brain goes. But the fact is that in this country, we've talked about this before. In this country, we treat drugs. Now, this wasn't intent to distribute. This wasn't, you know, trafficking drugs or anything like that. This was possession, right?
You said it, trumped up. What else can we add to it?
So exactly. So, and as you know, they will find substances in a car. This happened to us. Well, almost happened to us. They will find a substance in a car. And it will register on their tester, or their dog will tell them something. They will just claim it as a substance, even if it doesn't exist. And then, boom, you're in handcuffs in jail. This happened to us in Mississippi, or almost happened to us in Mississippi.
No, it's happened to us. We didn't end up arrested, but the officer said, with a period, not a question mark, the dog found something.
Yeah, exactly. And then they have testers that will test stuff for any number of things. And if it registers anything, you're under arrest, right?
So, point of context, I just bought a new car. Neither of us have ever sold or tried drugs.
Neither one of us. And we never drank alcohol.
And the dog, I guess, were lying.
Yeah. So this is a real thing. Now,
this was day one of the new car too, by the way. So it's not like we had friends in the car that may have had something. Nope. Bought the new car.
We picked it up and we're driving. That's why we're in Mississippi.
Yeah, we're driving back. So
yeah, we were driving from Florida back to the West Coast, and we got pulled over in Mississippi at night. It was pretty intense. Anyway,
we've shared that story before. I'm sure we will again.
So, possession, right? Now, what I was going to say is this country treats drugs like it's a criminal issue and not like it's a health issue.
Yes.
Right?
When you look like us.
There you go.
Right?
Because the fentanyl stuff, a
pandemic or an epidemic.
When it's the
opioid or crisis.
Yeah, the fentanyl.
When the people who are suffering the most at the hands of this drug don't look like Ramses and I. You call it the war on drugs when you do look like Ramses and I.
Yeah. And just imagine why folks might take drugs. I shared a little bit about this on the Black Information Network daily podcast, but in brief, there's a study that I'm familiar with about rats, right? And they put rats in a cage, and they put a water bottle that had like some drugs in it, and then a regular water bottle. And the rats overwhelmingly drank from the water bottle that had the drugs in it, right? But the rats were in a cage. When they took the rats out of the cage and put them in a different environment where they had like a wheel to run on, and they had a maze to play in, and they had other rats to play with, and they had, you know, space to spread their legs and do rat stuff, they overwhelmingly just drank the water. They hardly ever touched the drug water. And so again, a health issue, not a criminal issue. These rats aren't criminals. You know what I mean? Or, I mean, if you want to go apples to apples, then you have to say that the rats are criminals too. And then you sound stupid. Right. So this is why he ends up in jail. OK, Now, why do the officers come to his cell? Okay, so according according to the reports, remember we said a health issue. According to reports, he was kicking the cell door and refusing to stop. Okay, now, to me, that means there is a mental health issue, right? And we've talked about this before too on the show. The intersection of, you know, the criminal justice system and mental health issues is where we find a huge amount of problems with all of our communities. It doesn't matter which color you are. These people are not equipped to handle this sort of stuff. And they have this bully mentality, this gang mentality, as we've seen in the video. And you end up with folks who are responding to a person who's perhaps having a mental health crisis, kicking a door, refusing to stop. Five officers show up. They beat this man on one video, drag him into the hallway, and kick him a bunch of times on another video, and then drag him away. And then the worst part about this is that they've launched an investigation into themselves to see if there was any wrongdoing.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy? So I think it's, again, important to talk about this. Not only was it very disturbing to watch, but I think that this shows exactly what the evil, you know, there's no panic when a person is in prison. There's no, he doesn't have a gun. You know what I'm trying to say?
And if you just don't enter the cell, there's literally no danger
to anyone.
To anyone.
Right. And they're, of course, trying to say that he assaulted them when the video, one of the officers hurt his hand, I want to say. And the video shows the officer like swinging and missing and punching the wall.
Oh, great.
So they want to charge him for that. And then another one said that, you know, when he swung back, he like hit him on the side of the head. So, and of course, you know, he's got to go through his lawyer to, you know, see if there's any sort of restitution, and they have to wait until they investigate themselves to determine whether or not there was any wrongdoing or if that shouldn't have happened. And so
I'm sure they won't even find cause to press charges against themselves.
Yeah. So, you know, for those that know, you already know, but for those that don't, this is a glimpse into what it can be like to be a Black person interacting with the criminal justice system.
And now, Proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
But if you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward, and you are listening to, once again, Civic Cypher.
That's the truth. And stick around. We still got a lot more show in store for you. We're going to talk about the political climate this country.
Very, very interesting topic.
Yes. We've had an interesting midterm election.
that's one way to put it.
Yeah, some interesting characters that came to the forefront. And, you know, some of these characters won. A lot didn't, thank God. But a lot stood the chance, stood a really good chance. And a lot of places it was very close. Do you know that there was people that were voting to remove slavery from their laws?
Still.
And then there were people voting to keep it. So we're going to talk about that. And stick around, because we're also going to talk about how gangster Tupac was. But first, we're going to discuss how to become a better ally. Baba. This is sponsored by Major Threads. Check out quality menswear and sportswear at majorthreads.com. Baba. So today's Baba, better allies. We're going to shout out everyone who didn't give in to fear mongering, who voted for integrity and class. Far be it for me to say whether or not you voted along party lines, because the more I do this show, the more I realize that there are people who have conservative values and conservative beliefs that I absolutely don't agree with. They're not in alignment with my spirit whatsoever, but they're decent folks and they can identify decent qualities in other human beings. For everybody that adheres to a shared reality, for everybody that cast a vote saying like, hey, you know what, that's something different, you know, I like this, but y'all are taking it way too far. It's important to shout out those people recognizing their role and their responsibility to say, hey, look, I'm cool, but I'm y'all doing too much, right? The results of the midterm show that Trumpism, while not a dead ideology, doesn't have the strength it once did. To us around here, that lets a little air out of the ball. That was a monster. I don't want to act like it's gone.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
Yeah, but you know, to just feel like, okay, listen, we, you know, especially where we live in a very red state that has recently been blue. So what they say, thank the Lord for Jesus, or however they say that, man, all day and tomorrow. To everyone who stood in line and followed up to make sure their vote counted and contributed to quelling that red wave everyone was expected, you are an example of Baba, and we want to say thank you. And I think that that is a great segue into talking about our current political climate. So let's start where we need to start. Q.
Yes, sir.
Give us your thoughts. Get us started on this.
Well, first and foremost, I voted. Nice. I think that's important to say out loud.
Mm-hmm.
We had a conversation. Bless you. We had a conversation recently with Charlemagne.
Mm-hmm.
Charlemagne the God, shout out. And he said something that was so profound.
Yeah.
That I think a lot of us think, but haven't. I'd never heard it articulated so precise and perfect. You know, we've been dealing with one political party that just fails to show up for us, right? They make a lot of promises to us. We go out and vote based on those promises. There is no obligation for them to keep them, because this game is rigged in a way where you either have to support this person or this one, or you don't participate.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm speaking for Ramses, because I'll take that latitude here, our ancestors put too much on the line for us to have this right, for us to not exercise it.
Mm-hmm.
But Charlemagne made me, for the first time, have a lot more empathy for those people who have just checked out.
Yeah.
Because it's like, listen, man, you are doing nothing for us. However, you are trying to take us back pre the Civil War.
Right.
And man, those are hard choices.
Yeah.
Except they shouldn't be, right? It's the status quo, which sucks, versus going back to pre-Civil War.
Right.
Right. So even when said that way, the choice still seems obvious. Neither of them are great. But when you talk about the lesser of two evils, one of them is way lesser.
Yeah.
Way lesser. Y'all I'm forgive me if I'm that ain't you. Right, but you know no, what I'm trying to say.
I got you.
So yeah, that has been the reality presented to us. However, I remember when I was a kid, Ramses, my mother did not vote for Ronald Reagan. But several people that she worked with did. And the day after the election was over, those same people came to work and asked her, how's Quentin? Now, my name is Quinton, but most people just say Quentin because pronouncing that O requires a little bit more effort than people want to put in. But you know, how's Quentin? How's the family? Hey, you want to go have lunch? Like, there were common things that all Americans seemed to have in common.
Mm-hmm.
And the differences in who you voted for was very, very nuanced and based on specific differences, like how this person is going to approach taxes, how this person is going to approach education, you know. And it was very, very little differences in political ideology that made people vote for one person versus the other, in addition to, like you said before, people just voting along party lines. Hey, I'm a Democrat, so that's what I'm going to vote all Democrat.
Yeah.
I'm a Republican, I'm going to vote all Republican. But our differences were very, very minuscule. There was so much stuff in the middle that we agreed on what would be good outcomes for all of us, that even if we voted for a different person, we weren't at odds afterward, because voting for your candidate did not mean an awful life for me and people that look like me, or me and people that I care about.
Yeah.
We've gotten to that point now where you supporting that candidate means you're either complicit in supporting awful outcomes for me at worst, or at best, you're okay with awful outcome.
That's what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like either way, like, man, you voted for them. And then the other side thinks, oh, well, you guys are just brainwashed and stupid for supporting your candidate. Eh, at least my candidate doesn't want to see you enslaved. You know what I mean? So it's gone down to the point where our differences have caused such a wide divide that there is no common ground anymore.
Mm.
By supporting this party and that candidate, you are opposed to me personally.
Yeah, that has real consequences.
And that's how it feels. So you talked about the fear mongering.
Mm.
There are candidates in our state, and Rams and I are broadcasting from Arizona, that didn't even run a campaign. Their materials just simply said, hey, Trump likes me. And you guys can't see me with this really
cheesy smile with two thumbs up.
But like that was the whole thing.
Right.
Like they bought so much into that because they saw it work. I mean, that's the simple truth is that they saw it work.
Yeah.
Trump supports me. That's all you need to know. Vote for me. And thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people.
Some of those people won.
Went out and voted for people just based on that. So this extreme Trump MAGA Republican Party, which seems like an entirely different party than, you know, the people who I used to do charity events with at the Republican National Convention. When I learned, again, we use the word nuance, there was a lot of color, a lot of context that I learned doing, you know, raising money for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation with members of the Republican National Convention when I was, you know, 25 years old, living in Maryland. I met some amazing people, genuine people who voted different than me, but didn't have very different ideas than me. They didn't have extremely different ideology than me, and really, really wanted the same outcomes for me, for my children, for them and their families. It was really just about the color green, which for a long time really was the difference. Rich people who wanted to protect more of their money voted along Republican lines, because Republicans have for a long time put things in place to favor those with a little bit more coin.
Yeah.
And poor people
who thought they were going to get rich or felt like it somehow benefited them or fell in line with their Christian values or ideas or whatever.
It was more that, right? Because I don't even know that they ever convinced them that financially was in their best interest, but they found some angle to tie them into it. Or again, the us versus them tactic that has been used for centuries, mm-hmm. right? That there's a group that is opposed to all of us. So to just keep that group at bay, you should support us, you know, trickle down
economics
and all these different reasons why if you keep us who have it all in place, we'll make sure you have some too. Cool. Yeah. Right. So our current political climate is scary. And you know, I am typically not a very hopeful person in regard to the direction of our country with regards to race relations and politics, specifically because of our former administration.
Sure. Yeah.
However, I even felt some hope with these midterm outcomes because that red wave didn't feel like propaganda. It didn't even feel like fear-mongering. It felt like this is what's about to happen.
Yeah.
And the fact that it didn't go down the way that it was predicted, I was able to breathe a sigh of relief a little bit.
I wanna take a moment and shout out Dr. Camilla Westenberg, who she was on the show for a couple of weeks before our last airing. She came on behalf of the NAACP to encourage folks to vote. But I know that, you know, once we found out about, for those who are watching, you know, the political shows around the country, once she found out that Katie Hobbs defeated Carrie Lake in Arizona, she sent me that same sort of reaction that you just had, that kind of exhale, that sigh of relief.
Yeah, it wasn't really like a celebration.
It's just like, at least it didn't get worse. Like,
ah, yes.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't that.
Well, I want to talk about that for a second.
Please.
So, you make an interesting point. Republicans and Democrats, you know, when we were talking to Charlemagne, you're right, he brought up an excellent point saying, it's hard to convince people to go vote. we on Civic Cypher, and I'm sure Charlemagne is as well, glad that you all went out and voted. Please do it again, because we've let our voices be heard. We fought back against that red wave, and it was kind of a maybe a drop or two. That's probably all it was. But there was something that he said, as Q mentioned, that how can I convince people to go and vote when the political process doesn't impact their lives in any meaningful way? People need money right now.
And if it does impact them in a meaningful way, it's in a negative way.
Right, right. And so to convince them that they should be involved with, you know, go out and vote blue. And, you know, especially Black and brown people are looking around like, well, these guys never do anything for us. They always say they're going to do something. They don't have any strength. The Republicans are gangsters, and the Democrats are just soft and keep electing these people, and they don't do anything. And when he said it, it's like, yo, man, you're right, man. I know that. You're right. Ugh. And we're frustrated with that, too, because we're like, yo, why don't you just abortion? What? Just put more judges in there, man. Why you can't do that? Like, be a boss. Were you scared? You know what I mean? These frustrations are frustrations that we share. But, you know, I like your point that you made, Q, when you were saying that either we stay here by voting Democrat. I'm speaking in broad terms,
yes, sir.
You know, for marginalized and minority communities historically, the way these communities tend to vote. So forgive me if this doesn't reflect your reality, but for the most part, we're just kind of dealing with big numbers here. So your options are to vote for more of the same, because the blue team isn't actively trying to change things. They're just kind of, who knows? Or you can vote for the red team, which is taking us backwards, or you can just not engage, right? And a quote came to mind. I'm not sure if it was Eldridge Cleaver or if it was Bobby Seale, but I remember watching a movie. It was like a documentary called The Black Power Mixtape. I have it on my laptop, so I watch it whenever I'm on road trips or whatever and I can't get a signal. He describes the United States as a morally bankrupt country, and develops this idea that Democrats and Republicans are really just, it's bad and worse. And there is no good that, you know, Black people can expect voting for this candidate or that candidate often enough. And that's a sad reality. But, you know, unlike you, I remain hopeful, because I see, especially after these past midterms, more women entering into the political arena. I see more Black people. I see more young people entering into the political arena. I see over the past 15 years, 20 years of my life, since I've been able to vote and since I've been able to engage in the political process and hope for certain outcomes, I've seen a Black president get elected. I've seen, you know, and one of the things that I maintain on this show is that progress is slow for Black people.
Super slow.
Super slow. But it doesn't mean it's not slow motion and like the ocean, man.
It's like, you ever on the VHS press play and rewind at the same time?
Talk to me.
So there's VCRs that had four heads once upon a time. It's okay. The type of VCR that you could record, and you could record off a TV or record from another cassette in the same VCR.
Okay. Okay. I know what you're talking
about. If you just pressed rewind while it was playing, it would still try to go forward, just really slow. You should stop and then rewind.
Okay.
But if you just pressed rewind while it was playing, the computer in the VCR wouldn't know to stop playing. So it was still trying to go forward, but as slow as possible.
Oh, that's a great analogy. I like that. Well, yeah. But, you know, think about this. We are a people that, you know, our journey toward freedom started. Think of the Underground Railroad, how long ago this was. You know, think of, you know, Frederick Douglass and the life that he lived and the work that he did. I think that we are his wildest dream. You got to think about that. You know, this is this little 1 hour long show that is aired, and we're super grateful, aired on these stations around the country, isn't, you know, this isn't a huge, you know, footprint we're taking up in people's lives and in this space, but it's not zero. And, you know, for a person like Frederick Douglass to look all the way into the future and see me and UQ sitting in this space with these microphones talking to these people, I'm sure he would count that as progress. Dr. King, you know, Malcolm, you know, they would look and say like, okay, there's, we have a black president. That's crazy.
I mean, you and I have had this conversation. I'm not sure if we had it on the mic, but we had it multiple times in person. Mm. I spent the night at the polls to vote for Barack Obama. I was first. Mm. I was the first person, because when my mother turned 18, when my mother was old enough to vote, it wasn't legal. So we don't have to like, because when we think about our civil rights activists, I think people's minds go back hundreds of years. Like, if not for an assassination and a reasonably healthy life lived, Dr. King would still be with us. You know, we lost Rosa Parks as adults. Mm-hmm. So I don't want it to feel so removed. My mother, Reverend Estella Seacrest, you know, born Estella Essery Scott, Macon, Georgia, 1945. When she turned 18 in 1963, Black women in the United States could not vote. So process that. The lady who thinks that Ramses and I are the most magnificent men on the planet. This is according to her Facebook.
We love you, Mom.
We love you, Mama. but imagine that, bro. When my mom turned of age to vote, it was illegal. Mm. So there's no version of me not voting. Like, I can't reconcile with that. Mm. However, like I said, that conversation with Charlemagne made me for the first time pump my brakes on people who have kind of given up on a system that incentivized politicians to really do what's right for them, not even their constituents, not even their city or the people that voted for them, for themselves. And mm-hmm. the system in DC is kind of set up in a cyclical manner for them to benefit or profit, no matter which way the laws and outcomes go for us common people.
You know what's funny about that is Dave Chappelle went on Saturday Night Live recently, and he was talking about that very thing. He was talking about people in Middle America's response to the previous administration's leader. And he said something, effectually what he said was, this guy came out,
oh yes,
stood in front of everyone,
profound,
and said, hey, all of y'all that think we're doing X, Y, and Z in there, that's what we're doing in there. And then turned around and went right back in there and kept doing it.
And then he won.
And I haven't been able to connect how that worked, but I can see it working. I just don't know how.
Can I give you a really strange analogy?
Help me out.
People ask why the person who's being cheated with doesn't feel awful. And it's typically because they're not the one being lied to. What's happening is morally wrong. Like, there's moral bankruptcy there. Okay, mm-hmm. that man or that woman is married and you're their other. Mm-hmm. But you feel like at least they're telling me the truth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll go with that.
So like he said, the man came out and said, look, man, I know y'all think we up to some crazy stuff in there. We are. See you on the next episode. Yeah. And then rent back in there. And people were like, you know what?
He's honest.
At least he's telling us the truth.
Yeah.
Even if he's awful, he's honest.
And that's why no one, he never had to show his income tax returns. He's like, yo, me not paying taxes makes me smart.
Yes.
And everybody else. It's a
system that you guys set up. I'm using those rules to my advantage. Sorry. You guys are the suckers.
Vote for me.
If you don't want to be a sucker, you should vote for me,
sucker.
But brilliant. Well, brilliantly ignorant. I don't, is that?
Listen, man, far be it from me to say that these, you know, I've said this before in a different arena and about different people, but evil people are oftentimes brilliant. Good people can be brilliant too, but evil, make no mistake. You know, people don't often associate intelligence with a figure like a Hitler, you know, because you associate evil, and evil is such a big adjective that it kind of blocks you from seeing all the other things. but someone with charisma, maybe someone who's good looking. I'm not saying that dude was good looking. I'm just saying, like, in general, these are the sorts of people that
figure out a way to have millions of people buy into a very corrupt, very evil ideology.
Sure, sure, sure.
And fully bought into it.
Yeah, man, a whole country, man. And that's a stain on Germany in perpetuity. You know, no one's going to forget that. And Germany is going to spend the rest of their existence having to own that. Fortunately, I believe they do a good job.
A lot of people there are sorry.
Yeah.
Are owning it, are trying to repair. Right.
Yeah.
So, unlike some other places.
Hey, man, you need to say that again. But anyway, you know, these midterms, man, as I mentioned, you know, we're as divided as ever, but we know the whys. It's good that we talk about them, and it's good that we try to hold space to kind of move a little bit closer together. And I'm glad that we had, you know, people like John Fetterman defeating Dr. Oz and Carrie Lake losing to Katie Hobbs, because in my opinion, you know, a Carrie Lake type of figure is like I know Carrie Lake. You know, I work in media, so it's not too far removed from my circle at all.
A Carrie Lake type, more dangerous than others.
Right.
Very charismatic, very attractive, very well spoken, bought into an awful ideology, but for reasons that were very, very obvious. But then you got to follow through on that awful ideology, and someone like her championing that would have been really, really scary for Arizona.
Well, and not only that, she would have been, it would have been a lightning rod for everybody else, and this place would have been back on the map for the wrong reason. So we're grateful again to everyone who voted. We're grateful for the outcomes. Let's try to heal now. Don't forget what it feels like to lose, and if you can, reach out, try to build a bridge or two. But for now, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by the Maggie B. Knowing podcast. More details on that headed your way, but for now, just know that something special is in the works. So shout out to our producer, Ms. Maggie, aka Maggie B. Nolan. Today's Way Black History Fact, we're talking about Tupac Shakur. A story you may not know, that I knew, thought was really cool, and it came up on my dash, on my timeline. I was like, man, this might work, make for a cool WBHF. So here we go, let's share it. The son of a Black Panther, Tupac Shakur, promoted self-defense in the face of societal racism, particularly against police brutality. And in the early 1990s, he was a common sight at the Compton gun range, where he and friends would pass the time at target practice. Then, in the early morning of October 31st, 1993, he shot three times at two white men who pulled a gun on him outside his hotel in Atlanta, Georgia. Not knowing they were off-duty cops, Tupac shot the police. Police arrested him the next morning and charged him with two counts of aggravated assault. Now, I was old enough and conscious when this happened.
Those men were also doing something to another citizen.
Oh, we're going to get to that. Okay. Word. While two versions of the story persist, investigators found Shakur's most credible. The 22-year-old had just performed at Clark Atlanta University when a street altercation turned violent. Spotting two drunk men harass a Black motorist, Shakur intervened to help and shot in self-defense when one of the off-duty officers brandished his gun. The incident came a mere month before Shakur was ambushed and shot five times at Quad Studios in New York. All right, let's back it up a bit. Born Lisan Parrish Crooks on June 16, 1971 in New York City, he was renamed Tupac Amaru Shakur after an Incan revolutionary killed by conquistadors, and Shakur after his stepfather. His mother, Afeni Shakur, was a Black Panther and raised him in the party's revolutionary spirit. But he also attended art school, where he studied poetry and ballet. Bet you didn't know that about Tupac. And while his mother had been a forceful activist who stood trial against bombing charges, Shakur used music as his call to action. By the time of Tupac Shakur's violent police confrontation in 1993, he had already found rap success with his 1991 debut album, Tupacalypse Now, by that, and 1993 follow-up, Strictly.
Yeah.
Strictly.
Strictly.
Yeah, by that one too. All right. On October 30th, 1993, Tupac performed at Clark Atlanta University, and in the early hours of Halloween, he and his caravan of cars were headed back to the Sheridan Hotel to celebrate the show, with Tupac in the front car. But when they arrived, they saw two white men beating a Black driver in the middle of the road, blocking the hotel entrance. Meanwhile, Clayton County Officer Mark Whitwell, 33, and his brother, Henry County Officer Scott Whitwell, 32, and their two wives had just finished celebrating Scott's wife's passing the bar exam at the hotel when they left and began to cross the street. They said they were nearly struck by an unrelated driver when an argument began. This altercation is what Tupac and his crew drove into. Quote, it looked like a fight. And as we got closer, we seen it was two white guys jumping a black dude, unquote, said rapper Idi Amin, who was in one of the rear cars. He continues, and immediately Pac just jumped out of the car. When Tupac jumped out, everyone in the caravan followed. And then, according to Atlanta Police Department Captain Herb Carson, quote, one of the officers pointed a gun toward the group, unquote. Later, during the hearing, Mark admitted that it was him. Dressed in plain clothes, the Whitwell brothers were not immediately recognizable as police officers. Whether they identified themselves as such before brandishing the firearm has remained unclear, but what happened next isn't. The Whitwells were visibly intoxicated, and Shakur responded to the drawn gun by pulling out his own. Then Mark Whitwell smashed Tupac's car window with the butt of his pistol, and Tupac fired three shots from his 9mm Glock. Two of the bullets hit the Whitwells. Mark was shot in the abdomen and his brother in the buttocks. Awesome. All right, so why the charges were dropped. Okay, police arrested Tupac a few hours later at his hotel and charged him with two counts of aggravated assault, treated for their wounds, and the Whitwells were released from Grady Hospital the following morning when Shakur pleaded not guilty and was released on a $55,000 bond. The fact that the two officers were intoxicated at the time of the shooting was uncovered at a hearing on December 1st, 1993, which aimed to determine whether or not the case would see a grand jury. Investigators had also discovered that both officers had been carrying guns stolen from a Henry County police evidence locker, which Scott Whitwell admitted to. Most notably, the brothers had lied about who was the aggressor when the prosecution discovered after a preponderance of evidence showed that Tupac had stopped as a good Samaritan and fired his gun in self-defense, dropping the charges against him. Mark Whitwell was charged with providing false statements to investigators and firing at Tupac's car, likely coming from conflicting accounts of the window breaking. The district attorney later dropped the charges against him as well. Mark Whitwell resigned 6 months later. And so far the story is kind of awesome. If you didn't think Tupac was really about that action, the revolutionary fist up panther that he rapped about being, this is on full display for this story. But this doesn't have the best ending. I don't really love it, but I do have to share it because we're journalists and, you know, we got to tell the whole story. So I will conclude. Ultimately, the incident had a longer lifespan than that. The Whitwells sued Shakur in civil court, with Mark Whitwell's suit being settled out of court and Scott Whitwell's $2 million suit yielding a default judgment against Shakur's estate in 1998, 2 years after Shakur was murdered in Las Vegas. So despite these guys being drunk, beating up a black motorist, like jumping him, smashing the window of the car, destroying property,
losing in criminal court,
and stealing the guns that they were using, they still managed to win in civil court against Tupac.
And imagine
after he had died,
winning a civil case against his estate posthumously. Like, that is,
it's a little sad.
It just shows you the depths that some people will go to maintain the evil. Like, it's really kind of crazy.
It's a weird world. But for those of us, you know, I'm from California, so, you know, I know Tupac is an East Coast dude, but you know, Tupac was a West Coast dude too. You know, he loved Oakland, he loved LA. So, you know, we love Tupac over here. And, you know, I like when people put their money where their mouth is, especially if they're talking about, you know, real stuff. And Tupac was never one to shy away from that.
And, you know, imagine had he not had good legal representation.
Yeah.
Because that matters.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about earlier with criminal cases, not having a good lawyer could have you indefinitely
all the way
held.
All the way bad.
Yeah.
Your situation would be awful. But yeah, that's our Way Black History Fact. So yeah, man, do us a favor, put on some Tupac when we go off, or, you know, later when you're cleaning your house. You know, whatever you do to remember, you know, the ancestors, you know, do one of those things in the name of Tupac, because he was a real one. And, you know, he set a good example. No fear. You know what I'm saying? And stand up for the black man. especially when you see them,
you know, even if it's a stranger.
There you go. So you see them getting mistreated by whoever. But that's going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. Thank you guys for tuning in for another episode of Civic Cypher. Ramses, talk to the people.
Yes, indeed. Today's show is produced by Ms. Maggie, a.k.a. Maggie B. Knowing. Be sure to check us out on civiccypher.com. There you can submit questions, topics, and make a donation. This is an interesting time for us, but make no mistake, it is not necessarily one that has a huge price tag associated with it,
or any price,
tag, to be honest with you. So we're still trying to grow, and your donations still help. And follow us on all social media at Civic Cypher. We'd love to hear from you and, you know, grow this thing up together, man. We're trying to do something special. Fortunately, it seems like y'all supporting us, so keep supporting us. That's how to do it. And until next week, y'all.
Peace.
Peace. Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds is between, from sunlight to moon. Busting off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back, you like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander slash beat expander, here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show, get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse and resist. Like this, like this, like this, like this.